Intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, we will be sharing content from the August 2025 issue of Southern Living Magazine. Today, we will continue the story we started in our last episode of the Red Rock. It's in our long weekend section, and it's called Into the Red. And it's about the natural beauty around every corner in this tucked away treasure in eastern Kentucky. And then we'll go on to the Grumpy Gardener. All right? Sound good? We start with the cover of this magazine is fully described in our last episode. That's the August 1st. Podcast, which you could always find under our podcast section at ncreadingservice.org. But we are, until our volunteer tech team gets a chance to change it, right now we're still listed under Triangle Bulletin Board. So we'll look under Newspapers, Triangle Bulletin Board, and there you will see all of the Southern Living podcasts. And the last one, as we mentioned on August 1st, will describe the cover of this magazine, but just briefly, it is of a moss or forest green hue, and it's a photo of the Frio River in Texas and two people in some inner tubes that are just floating down this very private-looking river in Texas. And the print from top to bottom, Southern Living, the coolest place in the South, chill out, relax, and float through summer. Plus, Charlotte Moss's Secrets of Charlottesville. And then across the bottom, South's Best Barbecue Towns, Plants That Attract Butterflies, Ivy Odom's Fun New Cookbook, and James Farmer's Georgia Cottage. And right now, we'll get to those. If not in this episode, then in our next. Now back to Adventures and Travel and Culture in the South. And this is Into the Red. As we mentioned, Red River Gorge in eastern Kentucky. And we're just about in the center of this essay, I think. Yes. Yes. And I'll just reread just a little bit of the paragraph we began last week just to get us situated. Although all of these options require just a short hike, less than 2 miles each, you can admire a stunning arch with even less effort at Natural Bridge State Resort Park. The area is named for the 78-foot-long, 65-foot-high Natural Bridge, which visitors can reach either on foot or via a skylift. Stop into the gift shop to buy tickets, plus a slice of fresh fudge or a bag of cinnamon sugar pecans, and then sit back to enjoy the ride as you glide right up the mountain. Stick around for kayaking and fishing on Mill Creek Lake, miniature golf, and an overnight stay at campsites in large rooms or in private cottages. Hankering for another bird's eye view, we started our second day by soaring 300 feet over the gorge with Red River Gorge zip lines. Their longest line runs 1,900 feet, providing plenty of time to soak in the magnificent sea of green as we whizzed through the swaths of still dissipating morning fog. For every high, there's a low, and that's exactly where our next experience led us. Tucked behind a small two-story log cabin, the entrance to the gorge underground is easy to overlook until the unseasonably cool air that emanates from the cavern opening stops you in your tracks. Follow the breeze into a century-old limestone mine, that stays at a chilly 52 degrees year-round. It flooded in 1985 and was left abandoned for 30 years before local entrepreneur Ian Teal invited the public in for tours. We hopped into kayaks and paddled through the passageways and tunnels as a guide relayed the cave's history. If you go, make sure to look out for the giant rainbow trout that call these clear, cool waters home. And listeners, there are a few photos here. One is of the sky bridge. The sky bridge is a natural sandstone arch. Navigate through the canopy of trees with Red River Gorge Zip Lines. That's the company, Red River Gorge Zip Lines. And there is a little photo of this. Oh my goodness, it does go right through this canopy of trees, listeners. So you'd be very high up walking on this. And there is a photo of on this. I don't know. It's the entranceway. I don't know what you would call this, but it's the entryway to where you take off your zip line. So it's the landing, basically, and the walk to the landing, to and from the landing, where you take off and arrive back from your zip line trip through the canopy of these high deciduous green trees. And there are three people here. One's walking on the walkway, holding onto the ropes as she does. They're all wearing, they're belted in with some safety apparel, and they're wearing blue helmets. Can't say them too well. So there are two guides on the side. They, to me, appear to be precariously perched, but they are, of course, strapped in. And so it's kind of rappelling. Look as though they're rappelling down the down a tree, but they're not. They're standing atop the ropes on this, the ropes that guide you on each side as you approach the landing to zip line through the forest. And then there's a photo that's a little more calm here to the left of it, of this natural bridge. It's of the sandstone, and there's some mist, some morning fog, it looks as though, and there's the photo is framed to the right and on the top by a few leaves from the surrounding trees and shrubbery at the bottom. So it's very green among the sandstone, and even growing within the sandstone, there are some trees, and there's a dirt path that is taking us eventually to go under this natural sky bridge. So it's a bridge, a natural arch. It's a natural sandstone arch, and it does appear, though we can't see the view in the background, it does appear to be on a cliff, on a very high place. And there's another one that there's a far more distant view of the sandstone, the Natural Bridge State Resort Park's namesake arch. It's a 65 feet high arch and can be accessed by foot or a lift. And that from a distance is just among a very dense forest, lots and lots of deciduous green trees, and there are people walking back and forth along the top, the flat top of this natural sandstone bridge. And it's very high up, close to the top of the trees. It's through the canopy of the forest. And then there's a photo of a woman holding a couple of plates of food and smiling. She's under a white awning, and there are some tables there in the background, and people are eating there. She's holding, let's read here what she's holding. Red Point Barbecue serves dishes like shrimp and grits and grilled squash in addition to smoked meats. That's Red Point Barbecue. And back to our essay, Growing Legacy. Summers in Slade used to be a ghost town, says Dario Ventura, who has lived in the tiny hamlet his whole life. His Portuguese immigrant father, Miguel, moved to the gorge in 1984, when tourism in the area was practically unheard of. He spent $5,000 to buy 50 acres of land alongside five friends and ended up opening one of the state's most legendary businesses. Dario, who was born the same year his father took over a storefront that would eventually become Miguel's Pizza, charts the growth of the gorgeous popularity alongside that of the restaurant. There were the early days when their only visitors were rogue climbers in search of anywhere to get food. At the time, Miguel's was an ice cream shop. Next came the golden years of climbing culture, when the field behind the restaurant was littered with the tents of weekend warriors who paid for their keep on a donations-only basis and requested pizzas topped with leftovers from the previous night's campfire supper. Today, the makeup of the diners varies depending on the season. Families in the summer, climbers in the fall and spring. But no one comes to the Red River Gorge without making at least one trip to Miguel's. There's always a line out the door and hundreds of folks seated at a fleet of picnic tables surrounding the faded yellow building. Although the oven now holds 70 pizzas instead of the original 3, Miguel's remains a family operation. Dario's mom and brother work at the business. Miguel can still be found bumbling around, quote-unquote, according to Dario, and pies are still topped with produce, like squash, basil, sweet potatoes, and tomatoes, picked fresh from his parents' garden. A lot of why this place is so successful is that it has always felt like a neutral zone, Dario says. I think that's why it draws so many people, different crowds of people. That same come-as-you-are attitude can be found at Dario's most recent venture, Red Point Barbecue, which sits perched atop a hill on an old family farm. The restaurant's name is a bit of a misnomer, considering that in addition to smoked meats, diners can also order blackened catfish, Nashville hot chicken, or a grilled portobello covered in herb sauce. The food is simple but indisputably delicious. Sides like homegrown grilled squash drizzled with balsamic and grits cornbread slathered in butter are far from afterthoughts. Red Point is one of the very few places in town with sit-down service and a strong drink program, with bourbon being the star. The Blackberry Bramble cocktail and an order of peach cobbler are the perfect companions for a summer evening on their back patio. Later that night, as I was once again summiting the impossibly long suspension staircase that would reunite me with my cozy bed under the cliff, I was filled with a familiar, bubbling anticipation. It was the same wonder that inspired Don O'Kroner, who dreamed up the very structure I was residing in, to start his treehouse business, Canopy Crew, in 2013. Treehouses and cliffhouses are really good at making people fall back into their childish perspectives and view things from the imaginative eyes of when they were younger, he says. And I believe him. As I walked, twinkle lights softened the harshness of an inky blank night. As I walked, twinkle lights softened the harshness of an inky black night, making the forest feel whimsically alive. I rounded the final curve of the spiral steps and came face to face with a looming mass of sandstone, the shadowy cliff that at that very moment held my life in its hands. For millions of years, people, plants, and animals had all come and gone there, but that rock had remained. I trusted that it would do its job for at least another night. And there's a photo here of Sean Thatcher, who's known for smoking tender pork, chicken, and beef at the Thatcher Barbecue Company located in Slade. And this photo is of a man with an extremely long beard and mustache, and he's wearing a cap that with the logo of his Thatcher Barbecue Company on it. And his tattooed arms are as well. One's at his side, and the other is stretched over the handle of the cover of a huge, huge smoker. And there are lots of meats inside there, and there's smoke coming from outside of it. And he's wearing a black T-shirt and denim jeans. And then in the foreground, there's a small inset and a close up of. It looks as though shrimp and grits and some other kinds of smoked meats, barbecue chicken, and a creamy white sauce and a round dish in the middle. And this is all in a red and white checkered paper lining, as is found in many eateries where you're eating out at picnic tables. And you have a basket or a plate, and then there's that kind of paper lining, and then your food and baskets on top of it. And here are some, there's good food in these hills. This is just an after note here, a footnote. Outdoorsy tourist towns aren't often known for their cuisine, but this small but mighty dining scene is a nice change of pace. Daniel Boone Coffee Shop. Go early to avoid lines at this popular cafe and gift store in Slade, where you'll find a little of everything, biscuits and gravy, smoothie bowls, mimosas, and lattes. It's also a great place to fuel up between hikes with a panini or a wrap sandwich. Thatcher Barbecue Company. Owners Crystal and Sean Thatcher draw on regional flavors like Western Kentucky's mop sauce. The smoked ribs, burgoo, and chocolate nut pie are excellent. After dinner, head next door to their bar and music venue, the Pit House. And Red River Rock House. Local is the name of the game inside this bright and airy spot in Camden that serves burgers, burritos, and tacos made with ingredients from area farmers and purveyors. Its current caretakers, Brittany and Scott Klein, who own a cabin rental business in the Gorge, were fans of the restaurant long before they bought it. We had one of our first dates here, Brittany says. We have a picture of our 7 kids here from every age. You can see them grow up. That's the Red River Rock House. And that's it for our Red River Gorge area in eastern Kentucky, listeners. And now it's time to move on to the Grumpy Gardener, who we have in every issue of our magazine, The Grumpy Gardener at Home. It's in the At Home section of the magazine. And it always begins with a cartoon, bit of a caricature. And this is a cartoon of a small wooden cabin with a front porch. And there's a lobster. I don't know if there's a red lobster pictured on the front porch as well. And a smiling brown bear in the front yard. The front yard is overgrown, tall, grasses, and there's just blue sky through the two windows and door of this little cabin, and it has a shingled gray roof. And there's, as we said, a bear that's smiling in the front yard, and also a raccoon that's doing the same in the front path. There's a wooden, a reddish sand or dirt path leading up to the front steps of the porch. And if we follow it up those steps, we see a man playing a guitar and singing. And he's sitting on a stool, wearing blue trousers, black shoes. The guitar's pale yellow with a brown fret and brown stem there, and the strings, where the strings are. And he's got long brown hair, kind of a long nose. And his eyes are closed and his mouth is singing. And it appears as though this house is might be on the water. We can't see quite. We just see blue. I said blue sky through there, but it could be water. All right. This is by Steve Bender. Dear Grumpy, years ago I asked you about controlling armadillos in my Florida yard. Now I'm up to 103 that have been trapped and either killed or relocated. I average 12 a year. I am dressing up as an armadillo this Halloween, and my husband is wearing an I'd rather be shooting armadillos t-shirt. What do you think? Signed, Sharon. I think you shouldn't give him any more reasons than he already has. Just kidding. But what's the problem? Can't deal with a few possums on the half shell laying waste to your precious begonias, impatiens, and lawn, so you resort to violence? Shame. You should rewild your yard instead, like lots of those garden bloggers suggest. Stop mowing and trimming. Let whatever wants to grow do so. Soon you'll be enjoying a miraculous, carefree melange of prickly pear, honeysuckle, poison ivy, popcorn tree, privet, bull thistle, rattlesnake weed, ragweed, sandspur, and Bradford pear. This will result in more diversified wildlife, including squirrels, raccoons, yellow jackets, banana spiders, scorpions, mice, skunks, and Burmese pythons. It'll be heaven. And our next letter. This is called Rotten Tomatoes. Help, Grumpy. I was so looking forward to juicy homegrown tomatoes this year, but now they have black spots on the ends. Where did I go wrong? Signed, Nancy. Don't beat yourself up. That would disturb the children. What you see is a common condition called blossom end rot. It occurs when the roots don't channel enough calcium from the soil to the cell walls. To correct this, sprinkle a cup of lime around the base of each plant. Also, maintain evenly moist soil, not too wet or dry, to help the roots keep the calcium moving. Swarming surprise. I have a nearly finished compost pile that I was going to move. When I dug into it, I discovered lots and lots of termites scurrying around. I've been told by some to get rid of the pile as soon as possible, while others have said not to worry about it. What's your vote? Signed, Nancy. If the compost pile in question doesn't sit next to your house, chill out. The termites are consuming cellulose and wood that's present in the pile and actually speeding up its decomposition. Millions of termites that you never see inhabit the ground all around you. Unless wood from your house is in contact with the soil, and that soil hasn't been baited or treated, they're unlikely to do any damage. Leaping lizards. I live in Fort Lauderdale, where invasive iguanas seem to equate plants to a salad bar set out just for them. Can you recommend colorful options for containers that these lizards won't consume? You could eat these reptiles. I hear they taste like chicken. Plus, they're locally sourced and sustainable. Look for the official iguana cookbook by Joe Maney to find recipes. Not game for that? The following plants are said to be turnoffs for these lizards. Oleander, croton, chenille plant, bird of paradise, Mexican petunia, purple heart, ixora, cordelinin, copperleaf, and society garlic. Seeing red. My mom just got 4 red hydrangeas. Are there any soil supplements she needs to add to make sure they stay that shade? Signed, Vicky. The flower color of a big leaf hydrangea, Hydrangea macrophylla, the kind that your mother has, is largely determined by the soil's pH and the presence of aluminum in it. A soil test will reveal this. If the pH is below 7, acid, and aluminum is available, the flower turns blue. If the pH is above 7, alkaline, and aluminum isn't present, the blooms turn pink or red. An easy way to raise the pH is to sprinkle a cup of lime around the base of the plant each year. Aluminum is less available in alkaline soil. And Grumpy's Gripe of the Month. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but all of those highway medians planted with wildflowers could be unwitting death traps. It seems that the bees pollinating those blooms aren't terribly traffic aware. Fortunately, I have an easy solution. We just need to establish a national system of Bee Smart, and that, listeners, is of course spelled B-E-E, Bee Smart schools that will help teach these industrious insects how to read Bee Aware signs, how to recognize Bee Safe, you guessed it, B-E-E, safe, Bee Safe highway crossings, and how to fly between vehicles, not straight into them. I expect there'll be considerable buzz about this in Washington. Very funny. That's Grumpy. And, you know, there's a little cartoon of him sitting at his typewriter, a caricature. His typewriter is perched on the top of a upside-down wheelbarrow. It's a red wheelbarrow upside down. The wheel is just in front of the typewriter where the page is coming out. And Grumpy is looking grumpy. He's got on a blue shirt and some sand-colored trousers. And he's typing vigorously. He was wearing some glasses, rimless glasses. He's got brown hair and a matching beard and mustache. And he's sitting on a green chair. And there is a flower, a yellow flower, smiling beside him. And one petal, the petals of the flower appear to be arms. One is holding down the page of the typewriter. And the other has her arm around Grumpy's neck. And then there's just a brief article on Waikiki elephant's ear, a fabulous new perennial that makes adding eye-popping color a walk on the beach. Garden looking for a little bedraggled. If your garden's looking a little bedraggled right now, place a pot or two of Waikiki elephant's ear, Colocasia esculenta Waikiki, on your patio, porch, or deck, and let the party begin. Glossy green leaves with white and deep pink or purple vining will have you asking for a second pink drink. The foliage forms a compact mound, 3 feet tall and wide. Give it full to part sun and moist soil. A member of our Southern Living Plant Collection, it's winter hardy to about 15 degrees. If you live where the weather gets colder, bring it inside and put it in a cool spot. If you don't have sun in that room, cut off the leaves and force the plant into dormancy. Then next spring, take it outside and water it so new leaves will sprout. And that's it for Steve Bender, our grumpy gardener. And that's it for our episode. For today, we hope you enjoyed it and hope you'll listen next time. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And the broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org, or call us under Triangle Bulletin Board. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. We'd love to hear from you. So long until next time.